Doctor, look.
Stand aside, nurse. I'm Dr. Homebrew.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Dr. Homebrew. And we have a squirrely one for you. We're still confirming. We're still moving ahead with Mead. We're going to be talking a little about Mead BJCP program and testing for that and studying for that. But apparently, because in some past life or maybe this life, I've offended Brian Cooper. So we're drinking hazy IPA. And I, Cooper, you haven't really fully justified this yet to me, but I don't know why I have a can of hazy IPA. I have a bottle of triple IPA here, and like I don't understand. It's a good thing we did the mead first, I guess. I don't know. It's gonna be a rough night. You're also muted, by the way, baby.
We just wanted to torture you, I guess. Yeah. Yeah. That's all.
All right.
Well, the triple isn't hazy, man. So don't complain too much.
Well, no, it doesn't matter at that point. Once you hit past single, it's all doesn't matter. Clear or anything else. No, so we have a can of hazy little thing from Sierra Nevada, otherwise a great brewery, but we can't judge them too much for their flaws. Why are we drinking this?
Hazy IPA has just recently been added as a new style in the guidelines. There was a provisional style for hazies that was New England IPA before.
Yeah.
And it was something, as they got more and more popular, I had to reference this kind of unofficial guideline. It was actually pretty good and described the beer very well. So, just wanted to explore something that people can actually get pretty easily around the country, with Sierra Nevada having, multiple locations on the coasts. And, you can get a fairly fresh example of it, hopefully. It's not actually one of the classic commercial examples, but it's just something that everybody can get and kind of a fun one to taste and pick out what we get in it. And again, to torture JP.
Well, yeah. Life is pain, Cooper. I don't know if you knew that or not. Life is torture in general.
Football is life.
Only through the sweet release of the hereafter may you know pure joy, which is an English mild. 55 degrees.
Yeah.
Hazy little thing. I've obviously never had it before. Sierra Nevada, a double obviously always makes great beers. So, I actually have high hopes of being able to drink this. I also imagine that it's not, pouring it right now, it's like, it looks just sort of like a lighter Hef. It's not even really, it's cloudy. So it's not these like weird slush bombs that you kind of can see where it's like, oh, that looks like wet concrete.
That's where the word little comes into play, I guess. Yeah, it's a little hazy.
Oh, okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
No,
very bright just, smelling.
Yeah. Now, what was the date on the bottom of your cans? I managed to get something that was 12/20 of 2021, and here we are in February.
I really should have checked that.
10/12/21. Yeah, it's interesting. It doesn't taste like hazy, like the hazy beers that I've had before, even on the show. It has like a lemony pop. Like a lemon, like not even like a lemon peel, like actual, like just like a sweet lemon flavor.
A little zing in the nose. Yeah. A little kind of citrusy. Yeah.
Even in the aroma, it's just this very like soft, sweeter, almost like a candied lemon, if that makes sense. But again, like the actual like fruit, not even just the peel. Do you know the hops that are in this thing?
I do not know. I think this is also probably one of the first times I've been having this as well. So I'm not really familiar with this beer, but it is.
It's like one of the few craft beers that don't list the ingredients and like what hops is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I do sort of appreciate because, too much knowledge is dangerous. And we've talked to a few people on shows where it's like, I don't put hops on my beers anymore because, people think that they know if they're going to like it based on the hops and it's just a weird thing. So now there's just it has hops in it. Don't worry about it. Just drink it if you like the style kind of thing.
I think Sierra Nevada is pretty good about sharing the recipe. Anyway, it says here, Citra, Magnum, Simcoe, Comet, Mosaic, and El Dorado.
Oh, okay. Okay, those are lemony too. Kind of, right?
Yeah. That's I get the hops. Citrus. There's a little edge to it with a little tropical edge to the citrus, which is nice, and coming from some of the Citra, the Mosaic stuff in there. So
it's not bad. It's not
getting out big like Simcoe cattiness or anything like that.
Not at all. No. It's quite pleasant.
Yeah. What I think is interesting is that, to me, Sierra Nevada, out of all the craft brewers, is a really distinctive house characteristic that might be their yeast or something else. And especially in their hoppy beers, when they're hoppy, there's always kind of a muted top to the hops. Like maybe there's an equalizer they've kind of maxed out, you know, on the stereo, like how high the hops are going to be. I'm maybe not explaining this very well. It's really tasty. I really like it a lot. But I think maybe that's, I get a little bit of that lemon you're talking about, JP. And, you know, maybe that's just part of the malt bill or the yeast or like a house flavor. But I like it. You know, this is not my favorite IPA. It's not my favorite hazy IPA. But if I go into a bar and this is, it's like, you know, Budweiser, Coors, and, you know, hazy little thing, I'm drinking the hazy little thing.
You know, absolutely, over a lot of other beers too. That not necessarily.
Oh yeah,
I could see this beer be. I mean, for me, you know, my opinion on IPAs in general, but like it's just, you know, it does taste a little hot to me. But I could see this being, if you like hazy IPAs, you can still branch out and try like the latest ooze beer from your local brewer, whatever. But you can still come back to it. It's consistent. It's the try. It would be like a tried and true kind of thing for this style, which Sierra Nevada does really well.
It's a beer that you want to drink fresh, though. And that's part of the thing why, like, we don't get a lot of the New England IPAs out here and have them taste very, very good when you do, you know, because they just have to travel so far and they just don't age well. Or especially if you get, you know, you really have to be careful controlling oxidation in these guys.
Yeah. No offense. I'm going back to my tea.
Yeah.
It's chai, though. So there's some spiciness to it. You know.
Hop tea?
No.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what they had at Total Wine when I was getting these meads the other day and getting the beers for the show? They actually had in the back like cases of Heady Topper, which I've never had. And I could in the cold room in the back of that Total Wine on the top shelf, go in the cold room, make a left almost all tomorrow. The way to the back. It's next to the Russian Rivers. I've for never breakfast. Had Heady Topper, but it was like $20 for a 4-pack. And I'm like, just for that reason, Brian, I'm like, you know, I don't know. It's had to travel so far. I don't know if it's going to be worth $20 a 4-pack by the time I get it, or if it's going to be as classic. But then, like, I also get what John is saying, because, like, I've never had it, and it's this legendary beer that kind of started the whole New England IPA phenomenon. And I'd like to, at some point, give that a shot. So
you had your chance.
It's in the cold room, John, so go back to that Total Wine tomorrow.
You had your chance.
Make good coin. Buy $20 4-pack.
Well, also, it's not like you don't get reimbursed. You should have bought it.
Just put it on the Brewing Network.
That's true. I should have bought some for the show. We could have all had some Heady Topper.
I had some. Time. Someone shipped us two. It was like to us years ago on the show. It was like 2 weeks canned, and it just sort of tasted like vomit. It wasn't very, I didn't really appreciate it. But it's also, it's interesting because like it's so far removed from what the hazy style is now. It's completely different. So, you know, you're not going to drink it and be like, oh, this is the example of the style, because it's like, it just got put through the ringer so many times. The style now, it's just, it's evolved into this other thing.
I'm convinced that without ever having had that, the reason why they put it in cans and why cans started to become popular for that was that It was the early version, the early iteration of yeast sludge, and they wanted to hide that in the can. And then, the style has evolved. So whatever, I'm sure Heady Topper has evolved with the times. I mean, that's a very popular and successful brewery.
Yes.
So I will get that at some point. But next time, maybe I'll get that 4-pack and I'll just charge that to the BN, and we're all going to have that the next day.
Yeah, you sure will.
So the category for hazy IPA is 21C in the 2021 BJCP guidelines, and the overall an American IPA with intense fruit aromas, a soft body, smooth mouthfeel, and often opaque with substantial haze, less perceived bitterness than traditional IPAs, but always massively hop forward. So this is all about the hops and having it, you know, having that hop juiciness just come across in a big way, and keeping kind of everything else out of the way, the body's out of the way, you know, the mouth feels smooth. And, you know, some of that just comes from all of the grains, like, you know, oats and, you know, wheat, unmalted wheat, different things like that with a lot of starches in them to hold the, you know, kind of combine some of the starches with the hop polyphenols and create a permanent haze in the beer that just stays forever. If you're trying to do it with yeast, you're not doing it right. You know, I mean, you want to use a certain kind of yeast too. A lot of brewers use the London 3, and, you know, you use the Barbarian, you use different yeasts, but that gives kind of a stone fruit character a lot of times alongside that. And you get that just the kind of a soft presentation overall, but letting the hops really stand out. And so it's all like a lot of these don't even have any early hop additions, you know, any bittering hops at all. Everything just comes from the whirlpool and beyond. So, you know, aroma wise, you want an intense hop aroma, stone fruit, tropical fruit, citrus, or other fruity qualities. You don't want grassy or herbal. The malt should be kind of neutral, grainy, lightly bready, kind of backgroundy. You know, if you try to put it, make a classic, you know, 90s IPA with a bunch of caramel in it, it's not going to fly. It's not going to play right in this style category. Just real neutral back, but you know, if it doesn't have any malt at the same time, then it's also not going to work. But anyway, you know, light alcohol aroma can be in there, and then if they go into the doubles and the triples too, which, you know, I don't know, we're later on we'll taste a triple IPA, which is also not really an official style in the BJCP. But we're just having fun with IPAs today. I like IPAs.
Good.
Yeah.
That makes two of you.
Yum, JP. Drink up.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait. Really can't wait.
I mean, the darkest you want to get with one of these things is like a very, very light amber. Like they're usually from straw to kind of yellowish, you know, maybe a little golden. But yeah, you don't want to go too dark at all.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't want to go out of style for that.
And you know, another thing you want to do is watch your... in your water, the chloride to sulfate ratio is really important, and keeping like a kind of a 2-to-1, you know, chloride to sulfate in. And the chlorides are what make it softer and smoother and seem a little sweeter maybe, but it's going to be, you know, plenty dry, but you get a little impression of sweetness and softness in there. Yeah. And the, whereas if you have too much sulfate, it's just going to bite like a West Coast IPA and be wrong for the style. So it's, you know, it's challenging to make a really good hazy IPA. A, you have to use just a shit ton of hops and, you know, know when to add them and, you know, get that really to come out, just whirlpool the heck out of it.
Yeah.
And dry hop the heck out of it. It's like, what, 4 pounds per barrel is not uncommon kind of thing. Just go nuts with the hops. You know, it's a fun little beer.
What would you give this beer? Smart. If you had to score this in a comp. You know, I like doing this to you. What would you score this as? I would go 37.
Yeah. I would probably land in high 30s as well on this. It's mine's a little fresher than yours. I'd probably go 38, 39.
Mine's a little fresher than yours.
I'd probably go 38 on this. I was just, even before you gave your score, JP, I was thinking 38.
Yeah.
The hazy IPAs I like are going to be a little bit softer than this. This one doesn't have a lot of bitterness, but it does have a little... like a water bite to it, like almost like that West Coast, like a little more sulfate than you would expect in it, I think, to me.
Yeah, a little sharp there.
It's a little sharper to me. Yeah.
Well, that's why it doesn't really feel like a hazy IPA because of that. It's not that super round pilliness that you find. But I think that's why it works as well as it does, because it's not that. And I don't know, I feel like, and I've said it before, and I'll probably get in trouble for saying it again, but it's like, if you like super pillowy, hazy IPAs, you don't like IPAs. You like that style of beer. But if you like IPAs and you want some of that hazy quality, then this is the beer that you want, because there is still some bitterness to it. There is still a punch to it. There's a little alcohol to it. And this is what an IPA drinker, I think, thinks that they're going to get out of like a hazy beer that, you know, that you can't even see through. I mean, you could read through this, maybe not, probably not, but you know the stuff I'm talking about.
No, there's a thing too to the like the psychology of, you know, people that like things that are very, very bitter, and they yeah. tend to be maybe more toward the deviant side behaviorally. So like
yeah. whoa. Beers of the Joker.
Like if you're driven to like right. have, so like and that's why I see the hazy IPA as being something that's so approachable. And it's like, oh wow, it's an IPA, it's popular. I can drink it, it's nice, and I like it. It's smooth yeah. and easy to drink.
The hazy IPA is like is like the character in American Psycho, where, you know, on the surface, you know, it's approachable, whatever, but there's deep-seated issues, obviously, underneath. Anyway.
That's an interesting allusion.
Thanks, man. Let's take a quick break, everybody. We're going to come back. I'm going to throw this bottle of triple IPA out the window, and we're going to talk about it back after this. Don't go anywhere. Thanks for sticking around, everyone. We are talking IPA still. And so Brian decided to torture me again with a bottle of triple IPA.
And if you want to send us your favorite homebrewed IPA, by the way, you yes. can contact Brian at thebrewingnetwork.com and send us a hazy IPA. Please do. It's so fun when I get hazies and doubles and triples that I can torture JP with, because that's what it's all about.
Yeah, definitely do that. So why the triple IPA? What's up? Just because? I know it's beer week. Isn't it beer week this week right out now here somewhere?
SF Beer Week. And like, I know it's SF Beer Week when I go to my local ale house and like, you know, five of the, you know, 20 beers or whatever are just triple IPAs. It's just like you can get, it's crazy.
I hate beer week and so much. Like,
well, okay. I can drink that 13% or that 11% or that, you know, all right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Actually, I went down there. I went for a little run. When I do my runs, sometimes I do some carb replacement.
Oh, and sure.
I went down to the First Street Ale House, and they had tapped their second keg of Pliny the Younger. So I got my taste of the Younger for the year. It's good this year. A couple nights before that, at my buddy's place called Bottle Taps in Pleasanton, I'd had the Big Chicken from Hen House, and I really liked that one. I really liked that one quite a lot. And then the server recommended another one from Sonoma Springs. So we tasted a little bit of that as well. It was really nice.
Sonoma Springs, like good dudes.
Fruitier kind of impression, like more tropical stuff going on. It was pretty cool. But it's just, you know, Beer Week is so fun because there's so many different big hoppy beers going on. And the double IPA fest happens at the bistro.
Yeah, that's great. I just had this triple IPA. It's just pine sap.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's not good. There's nothing approachable about it. So I guess I don't understand. I thought triple IPAs left, by the way.
You thought they left the building?
Yeah, I thought like nobody does them anymore because it's like, oh, okay, we know how to max out everything. Let's dial it back to a respectable level.
Oh, this is beer week time, and this is like, it's like triple IPA. Oh, yeah, Pliny the Younger survived, I think, in part from being bottled during COVID time. And
as
between
it's not
like
over.
Pliny the Younger and Big Chicken and some of these, it's like it's the season for a big ass triple IPA.
I don't know. Harindu, what do you think? Are you a big triple IPA dude or?
Yes, I am actually. Yeah. And I was just going to say, you guys are drinking Simtra, right? I didn't get that, but that's one of the early big beer that this guy, Jeremy Warren, he's a crazy guy. He makes big beers.
Yeah.
He used to make when he was at Knee Deep. Now he's at Revision, and I've enjoyed it in early days. I haven't tasted this year's version, so I don't know. But all these, right? Pliny the Younger, probably, you know, the lines that used to happen and all that. I never went there, but Bistro Festival, Triple Cuff that won the Wondrous, that they won the Triple Cuff with the Triple Cuff. Altamont Sad Dad, I don't know if you had that, Brian, but that is pretty awesome too.
That's their second batch of that one. I've got some in the fridge.
Yes, to answer your question, I mean, I love triple IPAs, and the smoother they are, the better. So I'm kind of with you on that. You know, like I don't like harsh characters, both of the alcohol as well as of the hops itself. So Some of them are very smooth and easy drinking, kind of like Belgian triples, very sneaky. And those are the ones that I like.
Yeah, so yeah, the Sintra is one of the gnarlier, more classic. I mean, like you said, it's one of the prototypical ones, other than, you know, the younger. And, you know, people saw the popularity of that and, you know, Pliny the Elder, Pliny the Younger. And like, you know, there's actually a lot of good choices when it comes to triple IPAs now. And it's so fun to me to just taste them all. And you have to taste them in small, small glasses usually. So yeah, here we got the bomber can. You guys have the bomber bottle. I don't know if I'll drink all of this tonight, but it's, this one is very piney and very pungent. It's got, you know, Citra and Simcoe hops in it, hence the name Simtra. But
you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a well-made beer and it's clean and whatever, and everybody knows that. You know, I don't know. For me, that's not satisfying at all. I can't deal with it.
You're just not deviant enough.
I guess not. But
there's kind of a candy-like character that I get at the very beginning almost that I don't know is from malt or hops. But it's not in terms of sweetness, but just in terms of like the impression of maybe like frosting or a candy or something like that. And I get that in some really big IPAs. And I'm assuming that's malt because
it
that's not
an alcohol artifact too, Brian.
I think it's a combination.
That's an excellent point, John.
Yeah, it's alcohol sweetness that you can get. And as they age a little bit, sometimes alcohol plays that way, like a little candy. Like
that's an excellent point.
They should be very dry, and when they're fresh and the alcohol and the, you know, if there's no oxidation, it should just go down super clean and you still just want another sip. You'll get a little hint of sweetness from the alcohol, but it's deceiving.
You know, I bet you're right, because this was out on the shelf warm. This was not in the fridge. So if this is I didn't check, you know, Knee Deep kind of stopped putting born on dates on their bottles a while back. They put them on the cans again now, but I don't think this is a stale beer, but if it's been sitting warm for a little while, I could easily imagine, you know, the alcohol has, you know, there's been a little bit of oxidation or age or something that might cause the alcohol to give kind of a candy flavor. I hadn't thought about that.
And yeah. So also here on the can, they advertise 131 IBUs. Tweet. Which I don't know if is physically possible to get. If you have it, is it going to be there really? But by the recipe, supposedly it has 131 and 11.25% alcohol by volume.
Wasn't 80 like the threshold for hops bitterness or something?
Well, you can really extract
that you could possibly like, taste or something.
Maybe 100 that you could.
Yeah, I think 100 was the logarithm. It's like a logarithmic scale, and I think 100 IBU was like the platonic ideal of the most you could possibly get into a beer if everything went totally right and you know, the stars were in the right position and you'd sacrifice the chicken earlier that day.
The right, big chicken.
Yeah, a big chicken, and sacrificing it by drinking it and having that go right to your stomach.
There was that race in the late 90s and early 2000s of who could make the most bitter, like, you know, super bitter IPA. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of glad that, you know, style creep has made it a little less so, and like you can have an approachable, you know, triple IPA that it isn't like a bitter bomb. The other thing too is like when you go to the East Coast, and going to Providence for the last in-person homebrew con was pretty fun because I got to go taste some of their versions of West Coast IPAs, which I love, but like their versions were softer and a lot hazier. Like you just order a West Coast IPA here and you expect it to be clear, usually, for the most part, maybe a little hop haze, but you go there and it's like, no, it's moderately hazy, you can see through it sort of, but it's like it looks like a juicy hazy IPA. It's just like, but you know, they do different things with the water to make it a little edgier, and you know, it's still softer in general. And I think there's a lot of IPA makers that are making what I call a juicy IPA, not like a hazy IPA, but a you know, an Altamont does this too. They make, you know, keep the beer clear, but make it have those juicy flavors of the hazy IPA and less bitterness, all late hops. And it's softer and it's more approachable and mm-hmm. you know, style, who knows where it'll go next. The will IPA just die in popularity like JP hopes? I don't know.
Not all IPA. You know, what I want for IPA is just to come down in alcohol a little bit. Nobody needs a 7% IPA. We don't need it.
Are you a Blind Pig fan, JP?
No.
Wow, I love Blind Pig. Remember drinking that when Vinny was still making beer in Temecula, and kind of coming in the back door of the place when they had ABC violation and they were closed for a month. This had to be like 1998, 99. And it was called like Blind Pig Brewing down there. Man, that stuff was phenomenal back out of the gate. And it's still phenomenal today.
All right. Have we beat the IPA horse?
We've tortured you enough. I was just going to say, do we need to take another break? Or
yes, we do. We're just going to take another break, and then we'll be talking mead and mead judging again, and then we'll that'll be it. That'll be it for us. So hold on, everybody. I'm going to get something drinkable. I'm just kidding. We'll be right back. It's Dr. Homebrew. Hold on.
Hello, fellow BNers. This is Sully from the 21st Amendment Brewery located in San Francisco, just 2 blocks from Giants Park. Before Nico and I opened the 21A and before I was a professional brewer, I homebrewed on my small 4-burner apartment stove in a back house in Santa Monica, California, making my extract brews before graduating to the daunting idea of all-grain brewing. Homebrew books and information was hard to come by back then. The internet hadn't been invented yet, along with other things we take for granted today, like electricity and potable water. One thing I wish I had back then when I was learning was a radio show that could teach me the ins and outs of brewing and answer questions that I had about homebrewing, a resource for making great craft beer. The 21st Amendment Brewery is excited to be a proud sponsor of Dr. Homebrew, a great show that teaches you what you need to know about making incredible beer. Good stuff. Listen up, you might learn something. I certainly did. And thanks for your support. Tasty Crack Games.
The leader in affordable, high-quality kegerators is here. Introducing Komos, the kegerator designed with serious beer drinkers in mind. It features an all-stainless steel draft tower, a major upgrade over traditional chrome-plated brass towers, and Komos keeps your new tower cold with their air-cooled tower fan, wrapping your beer lines in frigid coolness. Your beer is poured from innovative forward-sealing faucets that don't leak, so they stay cleaner for longer. Dual gas inlets on the rear of the fridge allow you to run both CO2 and nitrogen gas. Serve your beer with CO2, serve your kegged wine or even cocktails with nitrogen. The digital temperature display has the largest range available, allowing you to use the Komos Kegerator for fermentation if you need to. And now Komos Kegerators ship with duo-tight draft fittings for that click-to-connect assembly we've all dreamed of. Buy direct from KomosDraft.com and receive free shipping on your order. That's KomosDraft.com.
Now, back to the examination.
All right, everybody. Thanks for sticking around. It's mead time. We are joined with Harindu, We're joined by Harindu. What's up, Harindu? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Of course. After that, all that IPA talk, I'm opening a celebration that I still have. Nice. So, you know,
an IPA.
I am a two-faced little bitch.
These are just so tasty, though.
I know. I have 26 left in my fridge. I'm hoarding
96
them,
left in your
26. Fridge? Yeah, so it's might as well be 96. Harindu, so you are the mead exam giver, right? What's your title? We talked about it, but I forget already. These IPAs are going to my head.
Oh yeah. Well, I'm a member of a local homebrew club called Doze. You might have heard of it. And maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I became the mead director over there. And as part of that, my response, and I also became a mead judge at that time. And as part of that, my responsibility was to have a bunch of mead events, get the membership interested in making meads and so on. We usually have a mead day once a year, and we invite other homebrew clubs to come and make mead with us. So part of that, I got my mead certification. And once I got the mead certification for BJCP, kind of things changed. We ran the NHC first round for 2019 and 2020. And since we are running the competition, we realized that there was a lot of meads that needed to be judged, and we didn't have any mead judges. And this is not just our problem. I think other regions face the same problem, because we have had our meads returned to judged and score sheets returned to us with the one or no mead judges. And when we were judging it, literally what ended up happening, we'll have like two or three mead judges. So I almost exclusively ended up judging a lot of mead, and that continued on in 2020. And, 2020 was unofficial NHC that we did. We didn't really event and judged everything anyway. So I got a lot of experience judging mead. So kind of an accelerated introduction to mead judging. Yeah. I've been making mead for a while. Have nice. Won a bunch of medals also.
Nice. Okay. So your role is to get people excited and to mint new yes. judges, basically.
And to make more mead judges here. So next time when we have a big competition, we will be able to easily find mead judges that are qualified, knowledgeable about meads, and give us at least judge those entries well.
Well, he also enjoys making people drink mead out of his Mazer cups, the funny
thing. I feel like we just got suckered into this whole thing, Brian.
Well, Harindu, on a scale from 1 to 50, why don't you give Brian Cooper and John here, go ahead and judge their capacity, not only as mead students, but, as teachable or unteachable people.
So let me start. Let me start.
Okay, I'm going to go into the other room right now.
You face the music, John.
I wasn't expecting this question, but let me start with Brian. Brian has been making meads for longer than me, I think. And he really knows his meads well. Only thing that he doesn't really have is that he never took this exam. I mean, he knows probably more than this and probably write better score sheets. And so he would definitely score higher than me on this mead exam. but only reason he took the exam because he hadn't taken it before. And one of the reason is that mead exams are very far and few kind of in between. So it's kind of very hard to find a mead exam. We had this mead exam. We had all 12 spots filled, and we had two or three people actually on standby. So, I mean, this is kind of difficult to get. So Brian, who could be a proctor level, like I said, better than me, he could have actually taken the, could have proctored, but instead he chose to get the certification just for the
I think, when you told me that you had a mead exam coming up, you gave me the option to do either or. And I just, I didn't feel comfortable like going in and just proctoring. Like I could judge a mead, sure. And I've made plenty of meads. I know how to taste them, but I really wanted to go through the education. And, I think you did a good job of that. And it was fun going through the course. And I had tried to do it with Dave Teckham before, but his classes are up in Sacramento. And then with the pandemic, we ended up doing this one virtually, which worked out well for me. And we did one communal tasting session, which was fun. So
I'll let you off the hook a little bit, Harindu, because I was just I was just joking. You don't need to.
John's going to be a great mead judge too. He and I are really close on scoring, and we get a lot of the same impressions in the mead.
Well, so, Harindu, what makes a good mead judge? Like, if people who are mead curious, I guess, what should they be looking for? What skills should they be, sort of looking within themselves to sort of hone if they want to become a mead judge?
Okay, so I was kind of, so there's two segments of population where mead judges come from. One is the beer judges, especially with respect to BJCP certification. And then another segment comes from completely having no exposure to beer making at all. Mm-hmm. It comes purely from the mead side of community. Mm-hmm. And what is interesting, and that's kind of going to give a little bit of beer versus mead judging kind of thing, is that they have similar things, as in we have the aroma, the appearance, flavor and all that we judge. And more or less the process, you're talking about fermentation, so any fermentation related issues will come up in both of those and so on. But on the mead side, it is kind of more similar to wine tasting and wine judging than it is to beer. And also it's beyond wine judging, even my opinion, because there is a lot of variation. Like traditional meads are just one third or one fourth of the style guideline, and lots of fruits and combinations of fruit and spice and herbs and vegetables. I mean, so which people don't do in wine, right? I mean, okay, there's some funny wine. People make some funny wine with fruits in it, but it's not a done thing. But in mead, it's like probably mainstay, like lots of fruit meat. I don't know, the ones that you had today, whether the spice and fruit and spice are like kind of major contributors. So, I mean, in a way it is, you know, a mead judge is kind of coming from a combination of all these things, but I would still think that you need to have a reasonably good solid foundation of the basics of fermentation. And after that, it's more about ingredients and other stuff and how much you want to get into it. And obviously at the end of it, you should be able to enjoy mead also, right? There's a bunch of people.
I mean, there's that. Yeah, for sure.
We don't want you to have judge IPAs, right, if you're not enjoying it.
Right. And so what sort of skills do you hit on your classes? The boys were saying that you guys were tasting honeys. So it sounds like you really break it down for them and you know, sort of get the flavor base of mead.
Well, that is you know, similar to a wine flavor wheel. There is a mead or honey flavor wheel, and there is a number of characteristics. So, I mean, it's super complex. There is the single varietals, which is, you know, varietals, honey varietals based, and you have a lot of sources of honey coming from different flowers or blossoms, and each one of them could have quite distinctive characteristics. But beyond that, it also, again, people add fruits, variety of fruits to it, spices, herbs and vegetables, all that. So the combination of that it's kind of hard, you know, in a way we talk about all the ingredients and all the honey varietals and what do you expect from a given honey varietals. And, you know, if you have a traditional, which doesn't have anything other than honey itself, then you are really focusing on the subtle characteristics of the honey varietal itself. But if you're getting into combination of fruit, spice, and in a mead, so then you're looking at somewhat of a balance of the fruit, and again, understanding what that fruit should bring, or understanding what that spice should bring, and whether you perceive it, whether you bring it whether it's in a balance that will be appropriate and enjoyable and harmonious, kind of, that really, in the end, it kind of ends up being like, you know, hey, is this mead? Can you keep drinking it, or is after two sips you don't want to drink it anymore?
Does it work?
Is it cleaner?
Yeah. Does it work? Right?
Yeah. Is the balance right? Yeah, it's definitely different than judging. Like unit judging, you're looking at all these different styles and trying to memorize every different world style that's developed over the years. That, you know, mead is actually much older than that. It's, you know, there was honey around for a long time before, you know, we had agriculture and such, and you know, it fermented. And it just
gave, I don't know about you, Brian, but the one thing that gave me confidence in going into this class was you know, we've been judging beers for 20 something years, and it's, for me, it's vocabulary, being able to say what you sense and taste and smell.
Yep.
That's the hardest thing in the world. Everybody knows what they're smelling. They just can't say, they can't put it in words sometimes exactly what they're smelling and tasting. It's like, I know this is XYZ, but I just don't know how to put it down. So,
right, and just look at the wide variety that there is, you know, given all the creativity that mead makers have. Well, beer makers could do the same thing with specialties, but like those two different meads that we had from Michael Fairbrother, you know, they smelled and tasted very different from one another. But they were both very balanced in their own way, and they just have to find the proper balance for your mead. So it really comes down to that balance between acidity, tannins, you know, the structure of the mead with the alcohol, even the body, if there's any carbonation going on, you know, anything like that. Just, does it work? So it's a little more subjective, maybe, and a little more like judging wine, I would say. And not that I know how to judge wine, but I know what I like in wine. and another thing that opened my eyes too, when I did Herendu's class, and I started going to his place for these mead day events and tasting some of his meads, was to open my eyes to some of the piments that are available. I didn't really think, you know, a piment is a grape a mead with grape, and it's like a wine mead combination, basically. And I hadn't really experienced many of those. I've made ciders, we have apple like cider meads, kind of basically. I've had Bregetts a few times, here and there, but beer meads, I understand beer and how you can blend that with mead, but I hadn't really done the wine mead. And he makes a really nice Merlot and some other wine styles, basically, that he combines with honey to make a piment that, it some of them taste very, very wine-like. I mean, the one we had in the exam was extremely wine-like. It was.
That was a Merlot base, right?
Yeah,
that was a Merlot, and that was the expectation. I put it in my descriptors, that description for the graders, that it's people are supposed to get that it is too wine forward and not enough honey. Bad news was that Proctor's really loved it, so
hey, I got lucky on that one because I think I scored the same as the master Proctors out there.
So they were the judges were supposed to think that that was off. That was intentionally out of style.
No, it's not off as such, I don't think, but just too wine forward. So the balance wasn't the right balance. You would want a little more honey to balance out the Merlot grape character. Okay. I co-fermented this with the grapes before the crushing. So this was like really starting base.
We also had the trick mead too, right? That was supposed to be meadow foam honey.
Yes,
that's the one that JP earlier we were talking about that could taste like toasted marshmallows or
that's wild
cotton candy. It's very candy like, and I was like, I think I taste. I kept trying to make myself taste it because that was in there, and I'm like, I'm not getting it.
Yeah, I haven't reviewed your score sheets, but yeah, I don't know if anybody.
I think we should just do it now.
This doesn't taste like meadow foam, because that was a trick thing that I put meadow foam in there, but it is an apple blossom honey, so there's no connection between the two.
Redo. Got it.
Well, I think we should watch you score their judge sheets right now, live in front of them, because that's comfortable for everybody.
I don't think you can read John's score sheets.
And I can't read my handwriting. I can't read your handwriting.
And I don't think he would get all the way through my score sheets because I just write too many words on them.
No.
No, I brought a ruler to the exam and I extended out the lines of the flavor. Oh my God. And the overall
Cooper's got the worst handwriting. JP, know his handwriting. It's awful.
I treat his handwriting like I listen to him, which I don't do either.
It's like Sanskrit. He's writing in a foreign language.
it's just all shorthand for him. He's like, here's my legend about here's what my shorthand means. Now you have to do the work.
I made it as legible as I could. I can read it. I don't have that problem like John does. But
yeah. Well, look, if you ever get a score sheet from Cooper and you want him to read it to you, his phone number is
925-749-509.
You're only making fun of me because I couldn't read my own handwriting when people would ask me to read a section of my score sheet.
Like, I don't know.
I remember.
Like, but dude, I just judge in vibes. That's right when I'm feeling down at the time. May not mean anything. Well, Harindu, what's next for the mead class? So is it five classes? Have you done all five yet?
It's all done.
It's all done.
The classes are done. They did the exam. The class was essentially in preparation for the exam. We did five classes. They're supposed to be 1 to 1.5 hours each, but ended up being 2 hours. Could have been longer, like Brian was saying.
That'll happen.
And then we had a tasting session at the end where we all did practice score sheets and drank some meads at that time and talked about it. So that was pretty awesome.
That was useful. I liked the way you made everybody just go around and read their one part of their score sheet, and then the next table, and then you alternate.
If they could read their own handwriting.
Well,
well, that's cool. That's neat.
There was no real judgment there. Like, there were no wrong answers. People's scores and their impressions. There were some people that hated the meads that John and I loved and got like a pine sol impression out of it or something. They're like, okay.
They were all wrong.
I don't get that, but.
And part of it was also because, last year when I did the beer class for the beer exam that I ran, at that time we had beers being judged online, kind of like what you guys are doing right now. Everyone has the same commercial beer and all that, and they will fill out a score sheet and they will email it to me, and then I'll give them a specific feedback on that. But this time we didn't get a chance to do that. So that was the only feedback that they got at that last tasting, where each person read a paragraph and we corrected that. And the idea was that they will also listen to the feedback we're giving to the others. So then they will realize if they're making similar mistake. And also doing one after the other, I was thinking that after each mead, they will improve with their own score sheets by listening to the feedback mm-hmm. given to all the others on individual sections that they talked about. So
I think that's a good idea.
Made up, kind of. The whole plan was made up.
Yeah.
So now future generations can just listen to this, you know, these couple of meat episodes of Dr.
Sure.
Homebrew.
That's exactly what they're going
to
be doing.
To know, right?
Yeah, your grandkids are going to be like researching, getting the search bar and with their neural net, and then just
we're doing a service here. Yeah.
Harindu, how do you work with other mead proctors or mead? That's the term, right? People who give the test or whatever, class people.
Well, so I'm an administrator. I'm also qualified to be a proctor, but since I was running the exam, I have to find someone who's completely. So administrator is the one who's running the exam.
Okay.
And then the proctors are the ones that know nothing about the meads that are being served, because they're essentially same as examinees.
Got it. Okay. And then they set
the
curve.
They have the knowledge about the meads, kind of. Okay. So their score sheets are compared against the examinee's score sheets.
Right. And okay.
That's how the graders know whether the examinees are doing well or not, kind of.
Okay.
Yeah. They're kind of the proctor score sheet is much bigger than the regular score sheet. So the proctors are the kind of the eyes and ears.
They're the standard, basically, to hold everything to.
Of the graders. Because yeah. They can't obviously taste the same mead as everybody else. But
right.
Part of the history is too is that Dave Teckham used to give a lot of exams up in Sacramento, and I think he asked those to start doing some mead classes. He wanted to start doing cider up there and things and different things too. So and branch out, but
yeah,
maybe next I'll do cider. I don't know. I need to learn more about that myself.
Absolutely. Well, what I was going to say, Harindu, is are you working with other exam administrators like throughout the country to develop sort of like a class plan? Because it sounds like you are doing some. I don't know, innovative stuff, but at least some very interactive stuff with everybody that you don't really hear.
Yeah, so I've been following, like, I actually got a lot of input from David Teckham, who himself has been running these classes for a while. Then there's, the guys from QAF, that's another homebrew club in San Diego.
Oh, sure.
Oleg and Ben, they sent me all their class material. This guy in Israel, Omar, he sent me all his class material. So I went through all of that and kind of combined all the information that was there. And they've been running. I think
that's cool.
Israel exam is soon, I believe. QAF exam got postponed to
August.
August, yeah. So ours was the only. In fact, we had a guy from San Diego come up to take the exam who was supposed to take it with the QAF.
Oh, geez.
Exam.
That's dedication.
So, we do communicate and talk and kind of collect information and try to so my class plan was completely based on some of the stuff that they did plus whatever is available from BJCP and some of the stuff that I kind of made up because I like to focus more on what I can add to the information that is there in paper, right? On paper and various documents. So I'm kind of like, even for meat judging, if you ask me, what is special things, I'd rather give my perception rather than repeat what is somewhere else. So I kind of modified that to some extent. I described all the meat styles and characteristics as what I expect them to be as I judge them, like I said, forced to judge them, because literally, if you're a meat judge and you walk into any competition, you're automatically going to get assigned to a meat to judging meats because they don't have any.
I worried about because I like judging beers too. So I think there's enough meat judges around our area that you won't automatically be assigned to meats. But, I like to do it once in a while and it's fun. I judge the best of show mead. For NHC with Dennis Mitchell 1 year, and it was just so fun, the subtle differences between all those wonderful meats that we got to taste together. That was part of what made me really want to finally go for it and really do the meat exam. So
we need qualified good meat judges so we don't have poorly scored watermelon meats.
That's right.
But to be honest, it works the other way around also, that people actually do want to judge meat. So, I mean, having a meat certification is a big plus because you actually do get to judge meats. Otherwise, you know, people, who wants to judge meat? Everyone wants to, you know, raise their hand because they want to judge meat.
It's fun. Yeah. I like that we had some people in our class that were just, you know, there was a honeybee guy, you know, apiarist or whatever you call it. But some guys that were just there, you know, not interested in the beer side much, but just into the mead and that's all they wanted to do.
Well, I think it's important to have the knowledge base there also, which it sounds like that system is sort of in place and you guys are building that slowly but surely. Sharing information, like you were saying, Harindu, and making sure that, you know, you guys are sharing best practices. And because it's not like just the beer judging thing, I don't know if it's the beer exam is sort of maybe on autopilot compared to the mead or even maybe the cider exam. I don't know. But if you get that information out there.
Since we brought up cider a couple of times, cider is something that is in a similar state as mead. Probably we need a lot more cider judges and a lot more.
Yeah.
Proctors and all that.
But I think if you have exam administrators sharing information like that, which it sounds like that system is there in place, it's going to be easier. And I think it'll come. And it feels more like there is more interest in mead judging these days than there ever has been.
It's become more popular. And the meads that are being made these days are, you know, some of them are just amazing, like as opposed to what you tasted back in the 90s and
which is like was like 2000s. Literally just like honey and then water and that's it, maybe, you know, and then yeast nutrient. Whoa, that's advanced home brewing, guys. I don't want to oxygenation. Are you okay? All right, slow down.
No, I remember going to the Minneapolis NHC homebrew con, what do you call it now, and like going to the mead talks there, and Kurt Stock, Ken Schramm, Steve Piatz, you know, Gordon Strong, Susan Rude, they're all there, and you just did like varietal tastings in one session. You did like mead nutrient addition, you know, a talk about making mead the more modern way. And even like, you know, Schramm's book, which was considered the Bible at that point, was being supplemented with new information that, you know, he would have obviously added to his book if he, you know, had the benefit of the new knowledge was coming kind of from the wine field, where honey is a medium that needs a lot of nutrient for yeast to be able to process the sugars properly and remain happy, because, you know, it's just sugar. There's so much sugar and there's not much nutrient in there. It needs additions, and you can't just add them all at once. Or, I mean, you can, or, you know, I just thought in the old day, and I used to heat my meads, and I don't do that anymore either. So I've been making them for a long time, and it's been a process. I learned a certain way, but I've changed over time, and
you got to do it.
You know, it's a process.
There is the bomb method.
Yeah, there's new the Tosna and the bomb.
Everything in it was boom.
Boom. B-O-M. Yeah. Look it up.
B-O-M-M.
Google it.
It's the bomb.
All right, guys, we're going to take off. Thank you very much for joining us on this IPA/mead talk. I think it was a lot of fun. If you want to become a mead judge after this, reach out to your local BJCP rep. I'm sure it's on the website. I'm sure you can get in touch with them. Or look, it's a homebrew community. Everybody knows each other.
You know what I mean? No, reach out to your regional rep in the BJCP and direct you to somebody who could put you in touch with somebody who's doing meads.
Some classes or whatever. Yeah.
I'm sure. But get involved with your homebrew clubs, and a lot of them have mead and cider buffs in there, and
buy a book, brew a mead, and send it to us. Email brian@thebrewingnetwork.com and he'll get you squared away, and we'll get you on the show, and we'll judge the mead. Now we have at least one certified mead judge on the panel here.
National. Was it 2-3?
True.
Yeah. Now we'll get
panel.
Yeah.
We'll get Brian too to take the mead exam next.
Yeah, there you go, Brian.
Mm-hmm. We'll
see. Like, no.
I don't think Char likes meads as much as we do.
I like meads. I'm just not sure how much I'm up for another exam at this point in my life. Right.
Yeah, that's true.
It was a lot of writing. Boy, I was tired.
I bet. John, Harindu, thank you very much, you guys, for joining us. I appreciate it. Yeah, thank you very much. And
twist my arm, buddy.
For everybody else, go to visit 5-Star. Go to 5starchemicals.com and learn how to clean and sanitize your homebrewing equipment. Yes, even if you're making mead, you guys, you still need to clean and sanitize. You know, don't let the high alcohol think that you can get away with sloughing off, you know, and having bad sanitization practices, because that doesn't fly around here. No, sir, it does not. Anyway, thanks a lot, everybody, for tuning in. And until next time, we'll see you later.